You can heal with somebody without them showing up in the ways that you need them to.
Born in 92 on the block with the sharks, come from a different cloth, y'all would get ripped apart. You want a diamond, then you gotta get it in the dark. We dropping nuggets like Carmelo went to Rucker Park. Now we eating from state to state, we scrape the plate. I put my eggs in a basket, took a leap of faith. I took a chance, now we grow and see the impact. Decoding success with special guests, now let's bring Matt.
Yeah. My dad always wanted to go and never could, and so we were there. It was incredible.
Wow,
it was
that is
really
awesome.
Really incredible.
That is so awesome.
Yeah,
are we rolling, guys?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Oh, this is great combo. I love this. This is a great way to start. All right,
there you go.
Welcome to the Decoding Success Podcast. Really excited to have you here for this episode. We have a gentleman that is gracing our airwaves, not for the first time, but for the second. I shouldn't just say gracing; I should say blessing. As mentioned. I listened to our first episode, and yes. I'm going to give you a proper introduction,
okay.
But while this was sent to me, I have a few things that I want to add to this.
Yes, 100%.
A world-renowned trauma treatment expert, Harvard-trained psychiatrist and psychotherapist, an acclaimed author of Transcending Trauma, I should also say, and To Be Loved.
Yep.
As a global speaker on the treatment of trauma and dissociation, he is passionate about teaching brain-based psychotherapy and integrating current neuroscience knowledge with the internal family systems model of therapy. He believes that traumatic events can have a lasting effect on the well-being and life of an individual, and that addressing these events will help lead people down a pathway of healing and forgiveness. He's the co-founder of the Trauma Institute and trauma-informed media organizations that promote trauma awareness, education, integration, and healing. But there's a few things that I need to add for the people. There's a few things. Number one, I will let you know the gentleman that I'm going to give you the name. I promise I'm going to give you the name in just a few minutes or seconds, I should say. He is a very relatable human. I'm so glad that you shared your story in this new book, which we're diving into here today. Very relatable human. He moves mountains. He's a mountain mover. We had a podcast together back in February of 2022, and I listened to that episode on the way over to the studio. I'm going to be honest. I was emotional. Mm. It's that freaking good. Furthermore, he is an instiller of faith and hope. If you have ever experienced trauma, a big T, a little T, or as he puts it, an overwhelming life experience, yeah. I want you to know that there is hope for you to heal. Furthermore, he is the leader of the Avengers. Today we are joined by Dr. Frank Anderson.
Thank you so much. That was great. Did I talk about the Avengers back then?
You actually initiated me into the Avengers.
Wow, that's so fantastic. Like it's been percolating for a while. It really has. And the Trauma Institute is like the beginning of assembling the Avengers team.
I love that.
So great. Yeah, that's wonderful.
We've been catching up off camera and on camera,
yes.
But to bring everyone full spectrum here, how are you?
That's a great question. I don't know how I am right now. I am on this whirlwind press tour,
yeah.
Which I have never done before in my life. And I'll reach out to my assistant, like, what am I doing today? Where am I going? Like, what's happening? You have to write an article by tomorrow. Oh, okay, fine. I'll write an article. Like, it's just one of these things. It's one thing after another. But man, I'm trying, like, Frank, be present.
Frank, be present.
Like, this is amazing. It's like, you don't have kids yet, do you?
I don't. I guess I kind of do. I have a dog.
There you go. Yeah. So
does that count?
It does when they're puppies, because with kids, you're so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You kind of miss the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're exhausted. There's so much to do. And this feels a little bit like that.
Yeah.
There's, like, so much going on. I'm like, Frank, Don't like miss this 6 months from now.
Mm.
Be like, oh my God, that was amazing. I wish I was present for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I keep bringing myself back because these are good things to be busy about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing amazing things, and it is bringing trauma healing to the world.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what I keep coming back to. This isn't about me. This isn't about all the cool, fun things. This is about spreading this message. And I go back to that. I'm like, let me represent you well.
Mm.
That's what I say. Let me represent you well.
How are you ensuring that you're present throughout? And I'm going to give you an example.
Yeah.
Just as I, you know, was outside, you know, I wanted to greet you outside to make sure that I bring you up to the studio. One thing I did, I caught myself in the moment. I'm like, dude, put your phone away.
Yeah.
Just, this is the first time you're meeting Frank in person. Like,
yes.
Be present for this moment.
That's right.
Like, what are you doing to instill presence?
It's a journey. You know, I've spent most of my life disconnected, as
Same.
We'll talk about, right? Yeah. You know, I was taught from age 6 on to be disconnected, right? So it's not easy.
Yeah.
And what I find is the more layers I release, the more stuff I let go of, the easier it is to remind me and bring me back. Because the going away, the leaving is protection.
Mm-hmm.
It's protection. Yeah. And there's a lot of ways to leave. Like we have tons of ways to leave, right? So the more I have two things. One is I have greater awareness of not being here than I used to. And I can get back quicker than I used to too. I had this experience a couple of weeks ago. I was meeting this Zoom call with this big Hollywood type. And it's like, I work so hard to be present, which is probably the problem in the first place, right? Working so hard to be present doesn't really make you present, right?
Right.
So I was like, and I lost my center. I really lost my center. And I was so kind of Frank, why did you do this? And like, I was so hard on myself for not kind of showing up authentically. And I was like, you know what? Check inside, like see what's up, you know? And it was interesting. The person that I was with kind of had an attacking energy just because he was insecure, right? And it totally got me, you know, because I was attacked a lot as a kid. So I heard myself proving myself. It's like, what are you, you don't do this anymore, Frank. Like, why are you proving yourself, right? Yeah. And so it was not a big to do. It didn't take weeks. It didn't take even hours. It was moments. I like caught myself. I recentered. So I feel like I really do. The more you release, the more time you spent as you, and the more and the quicker it is to get back. So I don't know that anybody stays.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the I don't think we can.
Sure.
But it's the moving in and out smoother and easier.
Yeah.
That I think is the issue.
I agree. I'm curious as I too have felt disconnected for I would say honestly up until 2020 I was probably disconnected.
Yeah.
And when I say disconnected, and I'm curious if this is what you mean as well, but like I mean disconnected from the little Matt that's within, or like the little Frank that's within. Is that what you're?
No.
Okay.
Okay. It's great to be connected to the little Matt. And yes, I do get connected to Frankie. He gets referred to in the book. So that's a piece of it.
Okay.
I don't want to say just no, but it's also connected to my core. Connected to my inner wisdom.
Yes. You talk a lot about that in our last episode.
Right. So it's both. It's like, hey, what's up? When we notice we're off center, it is somebody in here that's activated. Right. And it's showing up from that, what I call calm power.
Okay.
Instead of one of these parts inside that's running the show.
So my question then becomes.
Yes.
To access that inner wisdom,
yes,
do we not have to be connected to who we once were?
Yeah, and you have to be with instead of in.
With instead of in.
That's the key, because typically, like driving over here, I was like, in plenty of time, I don't like being late, and there's the damn Uber driver. I'm like watching the minutes click up, and I was like, New York, this guy's got, look at his driving, like all this shit was going on inside,
New York.
You know, I was like, I just stop, I'm like, okay, I get it, relax, let me be present. That's what I was doing on the way here. Okay, I get it. So you have to acknowledge what shows up, right? You can't just bypass it.
Sure.
I get it, you're frustrated. I get it, you're pissed off. And your text was like, hey, God's time. And I was like, totally relaxed, right? So your response helped me get out of my frustration, get out of the part of me that was nervous and freaked out, and allowed me to just be, stay centered. I'm like, what's the problem? Just relax. Do you know what I mean? So we can be, if I was taken over by that part, I'd be a mess.
Yeah.
Rah, rah! You know what I mean? Like, so it does happen to us, but we have to acknowledge it. Like, I get that. And can you let me lead?
Yeah.
It's like that.
I'm glad that text helped that because it's a text I need to give myself.
We're so much better at giving it to other people.
To other people.
Right?
Why is that, though? Like, I never understand that.
Well, I can be with your pain.
Yeah.
Or your frustration or your insecurities a hell of a lot better than I can be with my own.
Mm.
Right? It's like, this was one of the things in the book. I was like, oh my goodness, like I do this for a living. I'm an expert. People pay me money, big money, to help them with their trauma. Yeah. And here I am reenacting the trauma of my childhood with my kids.
Mm.
Right? So it's harder to go in and be with our own because the pain is there.
Yeah.
We're organized to keep it away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're so much better. I mean, we're not great at it. But we're better at being with somebody else's because it is one step removed.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the things the book taught me, and I know that we were just talking about it as we started to record, I didn't know you were Italian.
Mm. It was a... oh, good Lord. So it was a trauma on top of a trauma.
Why do you say that?
And it was some of the best moments of my life.
What you say... So you just pique so much interest because a question that I had
goes
to, like, for context purposes, everyone, we are talking about Frank's new book, To Be Loved, right? And these series of questions were piqued as I was reading this because I resonate with so much of what you experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you classify it as like a trauma on top of a trauma or whatever, what I'm trying to articulate here is, does that stem from European roots and the, I don't want to say the pain, but the struggle that comes with from being an immigrant?
Yeah. It's transgenerational trauma.
That's okay.
Transgenerational trauma. You know, and I love when you say I relate to it so much, I'm like, point taken, purpose driven. Like, that's the reason I wrote this book.
Mm-hmm.
That is the real reason I wrote this is I wanted my story to have people be able to relate to theirs.
Yeah.
When you say that, I'm just like, home run. Thank you very much. Like,
absolutely.
That's the point. And so for me, the complexity, and we'll talk about like kind of the specifics of what happened between my mom and dad around his violence and her passivity and how that was a trauma, you know, relational trauma growing up as a child. We call it complex PTSD. But the ethnic piece was so complicated for me because we had amazing family parties every holiday. It was like 30 to 40 people. I was like, it was so fun. I'm like, this is the way everybody does holidays. Like, it was incredible, right? And we canned tomatoes every year.
Yeah.
That was such a great family memory. We made wine, you know. We had all the wine barrels and all the equipment. Like, so I had such amazing ethnic experiences. And because of growing up in the South Side of Chicago, there was mafia connections everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And we heard about Uncle Nino's gas station got blown up, right? And as a 6-year-old kid, you're like, Uncle Nino's gas station got blown up, you know? Uncle Tony's car got stolen. What do you mean? Don't ask. It's like, what do you mean, don't ask? Is our car going to get stolen? You know, are they going to blow up my house?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So we had this crazy backdrop of fear of the boogeyman. I was like, people feared the boogeyman. I feared the mafia. You know what I mean? And it was real for a kid. You know what I mean? Like, as a kid, I was intrigued. We used to go to my uncle's house and he was kind of connected. And we'd drive around. These people would come with Rolls Royces and Bentleys.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, kids, you want to take a ride in the car? We're like, yeah, this is so fun. And then you're like, who else has been in this car? What happened here? How did he get this car? You know what I mean? So there was this like crazy dichotomy growing up for me. I talk about this one story, Uzzangelo's dog. Okay. Uzzangelo means uncle.
Yep.
Right? Uzzangelo's dog. that dog was a picky eater. I'm like, okay, Grandpa, you know what Utangelo did with this dog? That dog was picky, so he threw him in the coal shed. 30 days and 30 nights. And you know what, Frankie? What, Grandpa? The dog ate and shit coal for 30 days. And he was never picky again. You know, so you hear that, like, Italians are so good for telling their story. And as a kid, you're like, oh, my God, I'll eat my peas. Okay, fine. I don't want to be in the coal shed. You know what I mean? So there was this trauma and fear that I had amongst this, like, amazing family connection. Mm-hmm. So it was just too confusing.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I say double trauma, because it was complex. It was complicated.
Absolutely.
And I do think we all have versions of that. Everybody grows up in some family with some kind of ethnic traditions. Some of them are great. Mm-hmm. And some of them are not.
Yeah. This might be a little bit of a curveball.
That's okay.
South side of Chicago. I have to ask, Chicago pizza or New York?
Why would you even ask a question like that? Like, there's no comparison to Chicago pizza. I'm sorry.
No.
What is this long, thin stuff that people fold up? It's like a napkin. I'm sorry. Like, have you had Gino's East? Have you had Giordano's? Have you had, like, it's thick. It's cheesy. It's stuffed. It's like a whole different thing. I'm sorry. I've learned to fold up pizza and eat it like a napkin, but it's
that
a different
hurts.
World. I'm sorry.
That hurts so much. Yes, I
have. You had Chicago pizza?
Of course I have.
Okay.
And I couldn't even finish one slice.
There you go. That's
it's
exactly
like a freaking
right.
casserole. It's huge.
It is a casserole.
It's literally
That's so true. That's true.
So what is your favorite Chicago pizza?
Gino's East.
Gino's.
Gino's
I've never
East.
Had Gino. I've honestly
They're
never heard
the
of it.
Iconic one.
Really?
Gino's East is the gold standard, honestly.
Yeah.
And we get it shipped to Boston. Sometimes my kids are like, oh, could we have Gino's East? You know, it's not the same when you're there. They have a sausage, like a roll. It's a, like when you order sausage, it's a thin layer, like a whole plate of sausage on top.
Yeah.
With the cheese. It's really good. Yeah.
I'm going to have to try. Yeah. I've only been to Chicago on accident twice.
Yes.
I say on accident because it's like, you know, a very big transportation hub. And one of the times I was there, I just got laid over and I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Let's dig into this pizza.
Exactly.
But I didn't know about Gino's. I'm going to have to go there.
Gino's East is really, they've been, you know, 1920 or whatever the heck it is. They've been there forever.
I wanna ask you this question related to your family again. This is something that I picked up on from the book, and I'm just curious what you think about this. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're named after Uncle Tony, right? His real name is Frank Anthony.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Your uncle was a doctor.
Yes. Ugh.
Do you feel like, and this might be a spiritual question, but do you feel like that paved a path for you divinely?
Yep.
To pursue that in a way.
It paved a path divinely, and it paved a path of my trauma.
Okay.
It was both. There's a rule in the Italian Sicilian naming thing for men. Who gives a shit about women? I'm sorry. Like, it's so messed up in that way. The men are named a certain way. The firstborn's named after the woman. The secondborn's named. And the women, name them whatever you want. Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter, which is crazy. Sorry, it's crazy, but it's true. So I was named after Uncle Tony, you know, Frank, you know, got to name your firstborn son's got to be named. Blah, blah, blah. So we did all the tradition. And the piece that was complicated for me and my family, for me personally, was that he was a doctor. Mm-hmm. Uncle Tony, Uncle Frank, the doctor. My dad was a pharmacist who flunked out of pre-med. Mm-hmm. So my dad was the second born failure son, according to the family success story. Mm-hmm. So he had all this resentment towards his brother. I'm named Frank. And I was going into pharmacy school.
Ooh.
And I remember, I write about it in the book. I remember this one Christmas party. My cousin is like, how's it going? I'm like, really good. He's like, what's wrong with you? It's going way too good. Mm. I actually want to be in pre-med. And I don't want to be a pharmacist. My dad was a pharmacist. And I was terrified. Mm-hmm. I was terrified to tell him because I was like, he's going to kill me. Mm-hmm. My dad's going to kill me, right? And so thank goodness my cousin was there, and he's like smoking up a chimney. We're sitting in the corner, you know, in this big Italian family. It's like, do it, Frank. Just say it. Tell him. Yeah. Like all night he coached me to get up the courage to say, hey, Dad, I don't want to be a pharmacist. Mm. I want to be a doctor like Uncle Tony. Because I really, like, my dad was insecure in of himself, and he was threatened by my success. Like, I knew that, mm-hmm. you know? And so this was like the ultimate fuck you to him.
Yeah.
Right? But he did better than I thought. I was really surprised. At the end of the night, everybody's going home. They're packing up their, you know, to-go meals. And I was like, Dad, I got something to tell you. You know, he's like, what? It's like, I want to be a doctor. Like, I was killing it compared to the pre-med people in yeah. college, you know? He's like, well, my heart's beating. Like, it's like pounding out of my chest.
Yeah.
He's like, it's the ultimate in the healthcare profession. If you want the ultimate, I guess you should go for it.
Yeah.
I was like, ultimate? I thought that was kind of weird, but that was his view, mm-hmm. the ultimate that he didn't have. But he kind of was okay with it, mm-hmm. you know? And that was a huge, like, I really was terrified of that. And then later on in life, I'm so proud of you, Frankie. I'm so proud of you, Frankie. You're so successful. But it was a scary road because yeah. it was, again, that transgenerational. He's holding failure because he doesn't live up to his brother, mm-hmm. right? And then I'm the firstborn
yeah.
doing what his brother, the firstborn, did. So it was complicated, yeah. but it did work out better than I thought it would,
right?
Honestly.
Is it crazy to think that there are... And I do not want to be insensitive with this question,
yes.
so I'm putting it out there. But I'm curious if it's crazy to think that there might be benefits to trauma. What I mean by that.
Yeah, you are right on target.
Okay, so yeah. when I read your book, when yeah. I hear you talk, yeah. the fear,
yeah.
the desire to have your father's attention led yeah. to you progressing in areas such as school.
Yeah.
Right? 100%. So, like, is that accurate?
I say this now, Matt. I could not have said this 5 years ago or 10 years ago because
sure.
of the amount of healing that I've done. I chose this family. Mm-hmm. I actually chose this father. This is my belief mm-hmm. to go through what I absolutely went through to be where I am today. I wouldn't be on this show with you. I wouldn't be doing a book tour. Mm-hmm. I really do believe now, this is after, I'm not carrying the pain around it anymore, but I am exactly where I'm supposed to be mm-hmm. because of what I went through. I believe, I'm grateful to my father. Him and I now are a team together bringing trauma healing to the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do believe this trauma that I went through, I'm not saying, oh, no big deal. I carried a lifetime of pain, a lifetime of insecurity, and a lifetime of hate. Mm-hmm. So it was it wasn't an easy road at all, but it absolutely made me who I am. You know, when I listen to the accolades, I'm like, who the hell is that guy? I don't even know him. This and that, and like all the stuff, right? But I don't relate to that as much as I relate to, I have spent my whole life healing from trauma for the purpose of being here right now to help people heal. Like yeah. I do now believe I'm one of the trauma avengers that's going to help change the world. Mm-hmm. I couldn't change the world without going through what I went through. And I don't want to minimize at all people who are kind of still in their healing journey.
Correct.
And are in pain and like suicidal and cutting and all the things. I don't want to be like, oh, love your trauma. You know what I mean? Because it's difficult.
Yeah.
But it's true. If you can hold that perspective, you know, I talk about moments. Mm-hmm. This book was a series of moments.
Yeah.
Like the moments that made me. The moments that made me. And if you can take advantage of your moments, mm-hmm. like we repress them, we repeat them, or we repair them, mm. right? And so take advantage of your moments. What are you here to learn?
Yeah.
What are you here to learn? And I kind of do that every single time now, and that's easier than it was.
Yeah.
You know? So I totally think that this trauma that I went through was exactly what I was meant to do and meant to be, because it is my purpose.
Yeah.
It's so clear to me now, and I'm grateful.
You know what impresses me is the fact that you're able to recall on such early memories.
Yeah.
Like, I think about that. Like, what is your first ever memory that you still have and that you can pull back in your mind? Mine's personally in kindergarten, and I'm 31. Maybe it will fade eventually. I don't know how the brain works, but what's your first ever memory?
So a couple – this is an interesting question. So a couple things. And usually we remember negative things over positive.
Okay.
Our first memory statistically is negative. Negative memories get encoded differently than positive. So most people have a negative memory. You know, not everybody. When I was asked to write this memoir, I thought it was crazy. Like, why should I write a memoir? Me? Like, you know what I mean? What the hell are you talking about? But I knew instantly, I knew the opening would be, you're not going to school today, Frankie. I just knew it before I even thought about writing a memoir. And that was a moment that, you know, my parents took me to psych testing.
Yeah.
I got caught playing with a Barbie doll in my cousin's basement. And back then, gay was a disorder. It was in the DSM. It was a disorder. So they, well-intended, brought me into therapy for 6 years, once a week. Conversion therapy it was. It was like to make me a normal boy, not a boy who wants to look at a Barbie playhouse, right? So that's probably the clearest first memory, and it's interesting that it kind of shows up. However, and this is in the book also, I don't want to kind of spoil too much, but I had these repetitive dreams of this kind of dark figure over a baby in a crib.
Yeah, you did talk about that, I recall.
Right? Yeah. And so that's probably my first memory, but it's not a memory that's clear and lucid or like with words attached.
Yeah.
So, and that was more like a repetitive, intrusive dream, nightmare. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So that goes way back. And I do talk about that at the end of the book. Like, it's all, it all comes to full circle around what that's about. So that, I didn't think of it as a memory.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing, Matt. Like, people think about these memories as if they're clear and crisp and have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Sure, yeah,
a memory is like a physical sensation of, you know, nausea, tightness in your chest, like an overwhelming emotion.
Yeah.
Because trauma gets encoded in a fragmented way. So early memories don't have to be clean and clear and complete.
Yeah.
So what people think of as their first memory sometimes is like, you know, I just have fear or terror. That's a memory.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so interesting you bring that up. Like, when I think back on my first memories, a few of them, two were in kindergarten and one predominantly, and I don't know if this is a feeling per se, but like I really desired being next to a girl in my kindergarten class when we were leaving. So what I would do, I didn't I went to a Catholic school my entire life until college. So we sat in a particular order and she was in the front of my row. But what I would do, I would grab my jacket and I would go put it on next to her
because
I desired her so much. And then after that, like you said, the negative's ingrained. I peed my pants in the first grade.
That's right.
And that was where I was taught.
I peed my pants in kindergarten. We'll talk about our pee stories.
Well, I'm not kidding when I tell you how relatable your stories are. Your story, the dream.
Yeah.
I had a dream too. Your dream was repeating it.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I had one too. I was so petrified of a woman in my mother's office. Like, you remember back in the day, there was like bring your daughter to work day and then it expanded to bring your child to work day.
Yeah.
So I would go with my mom all the time and there was this one woman who looked like a witch.
Yes.
Yeah. And every time Halloween would come around, that dream would repeat.
Right. That's right.
And it was, it was just, it's wild.
Yeah.
It's so wild.
Yeah.
But.
Well, our brain does what it can to process things that are confusing, that are overwhelming, that we don't have context for. Like, you didn't, Mom, I'm so afraid of her, blah, 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 blah. And she, like, has this whole, oh, don't worry, she's really nice. Let's have her over for dinner. Blah, you know what I mean? Like, it was all in your head. You kept it to yourself.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with it alone.
Yeah.
It happens a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is it possible to heal at the sign at the scene of the crime? Is it possible to heal at the scene of the crime?
It's so a great question. That's a great question.
I'm thinking about it when I read your story, when I hear you speak. It's like, could you have healed under physically the same roof as your dad or your mom or whatever it is? So can you heal at the scene of the crime?
Here's the way I think about that. I think you prevent the development of trauma at the scene of the crime under the perfect circumstances.
Okay? Meaning what?
Yeah. So trauma is an experience that we have that's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And our responses are typically a result of not having the love connection that we needed and wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's why I say you can go through something overwhelming, and if you have love, connection, and support, you don't develop PTSD.
Hmm.
Right? So if you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, this shouldn't have happened, I'm here for you. Like if you get what you need, you don't develop PTSD, you don't develop trauma responses,
mm-hmm.
okay? So I think about love and connection as the preventer of trauma sequelae.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand that? So like I did a bunch of work here during September 11th. Like I came down and did all this work with all these people. They were in the Environmental Protection Agency at the time. And I was like, I want to try to help prevent the development of PTSD. So mm-hmm. when people get what they need during an overwhelming experience, they can process, mm-hmm. help our brains do what it needs to do so that it becomes a significant memory.
Yeah.
The problem for most of us is that we're alone. We don't share it. We have shame. Nobody supports us. Nobody helps us.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets encoded in these fragmented, unintegrated way, and then it becomes problematic down the road.
Yeah.
Like, you know, September 11th, the Boston bombings, I don't want to discount the significance of those for people because they truly are significant. But often the world responds.
Mm.
The world, like all the support, all the love.
Right.
Like, you know, like thousands, millions of dollars come in to help these people. And is it still significant for them? Yes. Can they get over it quicker or process it differently in the moment when you get the support you need? Yeah, I believe that's true. The people that struggle because of those big events had prior histories.
Mm.
Rachel Yehuda, this woman, talks about if you were primed, we usually recover from our first trauma. We get one free one. Second, third, fourth. It's kind of crazy. Second, third, and fourth, harder to recover from.
Why is that?
Our body gets primed, and our body got kind of physiologically kind of encodes trauma. That's the best way that I understand that. So,
yeah.
So she did this study with women who were date raped in college.
Yeah.
And the women that didn't have a prior history recovered.
Wow.
And the women who did have prior histories had much worse outcomes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So we get one get out of jail free card.
Yes.
Naturally.
Yeah. I think our body just does what it needs to do in order to process it.
Yeah.
You know, and then if it's, you have three, this is why relational trauma are complex.
Yeah.
PTSD is so difficult because your dad's drunk hundreds of times. Your mom's depressed and, you know, withdrawn thousands of times. So
yeah.
It's like over and over and over again. And it's too hard to recover from. And it accumulates.
That's so interesting. So that repetition really makes an impact.
Yes, it does. That's exactly right.
Wow. Yeah.
But if we can give people what they need in the moment,
yeah,
I believe we can help prevent some of the significance of long-term PTSD.
And from what I remember in our last conversation, it sounds like, well, you'll give me the quote better than I could say it. Love heals trauma. Mm. What comes after that part?
It's the other way around. So yes, love heals trauma is the second part. Trauma blocks love. Trauma blocks love. Trauma blocks connection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's love and connection that heals trauma. So it's this cycle, right? And this is what makes trauma healing complicated.
Yeah.
Because, and that was my experience so clearly, trauma blocks who we are authentically.
Sure.
Trauma gets in the way of our core.
Yeah.
Because it blocks it. And the way we heal is through love and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, theories and great models, they're good.
Yeah.
But that's not really, in my experience, what heals. It's love and connection. Mm-hmm. So you need love and connection. And often it's in the context of another person that then helps you access yours. Like in this small way, you offered love and compassion to me while I'm freaking out in the car right over. You're like, Frank, don't worry. God's plan. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
You offered love and compassion to me. It enabled me to access my own. Frank, chill out. It's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So trauma blocks who we authentically are. I am my trauma. I'm like, no, you are not.
Mm.
Trauma makes you something different than you are.
Yeah.
And it's through love and connection that we can heal that and release. Here's what I say now. Release what doesn't belong to you
mm-hmm.
and no longer serves you, right? Because it is trauma energy is energy that we absorb that isn't ours.
Yeah. Do we need a third party to intervene into that process? Because if trauma is blocking what heals us,
yeah,
like do we need that third party?
I think it's important. I think love and connection is really powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. Some people can do healing on their own,
mm-hmm.
but I think it takes a long time to be able to access the love within in a consistent enough way to be able to heal your own.
Yeah.
Okay. Like took me a long, I could do that now. I could go for a run in nature with music. That's my trio.
I know you love music. Oh, we're gonna talk about
music.
That.
Yeah, like those three things help me access source energy, God energy, love energy, whatever you want to call it. And now I can do my own healing. I'm still in therapy. I'll always be in therapy.
Yeah.
But I do think because trauma is a relational violation mostly,
yeah.
I think we need a corrective emotional experience to heal trauma, right? So I do think we need another person in order to do that. And people have these moments of healing on their own. You can have a moment and heal. So I think it's both.
Yeah, I definitely, from my own experience, like I would have never, and I shared this with you the last time in back in 2022, I got put in therapy very similar to you at a young age.
Wow.
I used to go to this therapist. I was in fifth grade. I would go and count the books on his bookshelf.
Right.
I was just like, what am I doing here? You know? But then fast forward to 2020, working, and granted, you know, I felt like I outgrew that therapist, but at the time I needed her to show me what was taking place that I was so blind to for 27 years of life.
That's right.
You know, so like I agree, like that third party is so, so helpful.
Yes. Yeah.
But I want to talk about music because this is a huge component to the book.
Yeah.
I went ahead and I made a To Be Loved playlist.
Oh, fantastic. I love that. Thank you so much.
Let me tell you what's on it.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
Let me tell you what's on this playlist. I really should say I have a bone to pick with you, Frank, because you made me cry on the freaking way here. I'm listening to this playlist and every other song, I'm starting to tear up. It's not perfect yet.
Yes.
Fly Away, Lenny Kravitz.
Mm-hmm.
One Call Away, Charlie Puth, P-U-T-H.
Mm-hmm.
One Call, you know that song?
Yes, oh my goodness.
Save the World, Swedish House Mafia. Sunday Best by Surfaces, which is a really empowering song.
Yeah.
There's a song called Sun and Moon by a gentleman named A-N-E-E-S. I don't know how to pronounce it, but work in progress on that regard. But such a powerful thing to just have and turn to.
Yeah.
I do have questions about this, though.
Yes.
I had a gentleman on the show.
Yeah.
And I very transparently, I grew up, born in 92, mm-hmm. Queens, New York. By fourth grade, I was all Backstreet Boys, NSYNC.
Yes.
By fifth grade, I was 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Huge transition.
Yeah.
Huge transition. All of that being said, when I'm in states of like wanting to release emotion or, you know, going for a workout, I often opt for rap, hip hop.
Yeah.
But in rap and hip hop are lyrics that aren't necessarily great.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's a lot of like anger, yes, and rage, yes, and just like those. Yeah. And I'm not shitting on, you know, the hip hop is an art, right? You know, but it's a certain type of art. So what are your thoughts on how music or the type of music we're listening to are impacting our trauma or whatever?
Totally. It's so. Yeah, I have my To Be Loved playlist. People can download mine.
Yes,
Every chapter of my book, like, I use music to heal. I use music to heal. And depending on where I'm at, I'm on repeat.
Mm.
Okay, so what I have for, I think it's the medical school, maybe the medical school chapter, I have Eminem, Lose Yourself.
Yeah.
Like, and that was like, it's not the words so much for people. Sometimes it's the feeling and the emotion,
the energy, yeah,
and the energy that goes along with it. To get into medical school, to get through medical school, I played that song thousands of times. Like, rah, 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 rah. I go for a run. I'm like, fuck yeah. Rah, rah. Like, and that energy I needed.
Yeah.
Like, that was energy I needed then. You know, I'll tell you about To Be Loved in a minute, but like Carrie Underwood, Blown Away, every brick, every stone, I mean, you know, that was like a healing phase of my life. It was like releasing all the pain that I carried. You know what I mean? Kid Fears, Indigo Girls was my first one.
Yeah.
I was all about feeling the fear, right? Feeling the fear. So I feel like wherever you're at in your journey of healing, because they're all stages, choose, like, let the music choose you.
Mm-hmm.
Be with the music that helps you access. I was so cut off, Matt. Like, I went to conversion therapy to not feel or be me, big time. So music helped me feel. It helped me access. So I would not judge it so much as like, oh, I wonder what this is about. I wonder why I'm needing rap right now, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what's going on, because I do think we're in different phases.
Mm-hmm.
To Be Loved, which, you know, I was like, I'm going to call up Adele and like, could I use your song for the title of my book? You know, they're like, it's okay. It's a, you know, from a trademark perspective, a book could be named the same as a song. I'm like, good. My family will not let me play To Be Loved in the house. I have been banned because when I was writing this memoir, over and over and over, To Be Loved, because it was when my dad was dying, and I accessed this desire my whole life to be loved by him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, get outside, go into the hot tub, because you ain't playing that fucking song here anymore. Because it was so what I needed at the time.
Yeah.
This was like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So now I can listen to, like, I'm not needing To Be Loved energetically anymore. So I listen to it and it's like, oh yeah, I can kind of conjure up some of the feelings, but it's not speaking to me so profoundly in the moment. So that's why I think we listen to different things at different times for different reasons.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And
I do.
Say trust it.
Yeah.
I say trust it.
Yeah.
Because it's been so important for me.
Yeah. Sometimes I overthink potentially the influence that, you know, like a music beat definitely puts you into like a state.
It's a good
question. And then the words are just like literally going right into the brain.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's chicken or an egg thing.
Right.
Like, is the music negatively impacting your brain?
Hmm.
It's a really good question. My kids went through this, like, and they all went through their rap phase. Like,
yeah.
I think developmental, my youngest is still in it. My oldest is now listening to, like, country music, which is shocking.
Country's booming, though, so I understand.
Right? It's shocking. He's like, listen to this song, Papa. I'm like, holy cow, what happened to you? Like, he was listening to all this rap. So I hear what you're saying, because, I mean, that's what social media, I mean, our brains are so affected.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about music, I think the words, some of the songs my youngest is like, I'm like, that is violent. Like, what are you doing to your brain?
Yeah.
So I do think there is that. I say, pay attention to the emotion, That's what I would say. It's like, what is it making you feel? What is it tapping into? Is it something you're wanting to feel? Is it something you're, you know, so we use alcohol. We can use music to get away from our feelings.
Interesting.
Right? Or, yeah. You know, it's like, I'm going to be pissed instead of sad.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fuck you versus, oh my God, I'm so alone.
Yeah.
Right? But I think the emotional resonance is kind of where it's at.
Interesting. Yeah. Oftentimes, like the hip hop, the rap, what it like excites me. You know, more than anything.
It's energizing.
Yeah, it's energizing.
Energizing.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, like, a lot of the songs on the playlist that I just shared with you, I don't know why. I'm the type of guy, I put on a movie, I cry no matter what it is. You know, like, this playlist, I'm not kidding. Like, I was literally on my way here, and I'm just like, I'm tearing up, you know? But I love that stuff.
Yes.
Like, I'm glad I'm able to do it. Because, as you were mentioning, like, that disconnection.
Yes.
I was disconnected for so long. Like, I said to my first therapist, like, I don't think I remember the last time I cried.
Right. Yeah.
And that sucks.
We have a lot in common. We do have a lot in common in this way.
I'm
really
not kidding.
Do.
Yes.
Yeah. I was in therapy during my residency program five times a week for 11 years. Like, a lot of therapy. I didn't cry once.
Wow.
Like, that's crazy. Five times a week for 11 years. I was uncovering my trauma, but I wasn't feeling it yet.
Yeah.
I was uncovering it, but I wasn't feeling it. I got better. It helped. But I didn't have access. Now I cry. I cry all the time. my kids are like two boys. They're like, stop crying, Papa. You know, my youngest looks at me while we're watching a movie. He's like, when's it going to happen? You know, like, they have this thing.
I think that says so much about you, though, as a person.
It's a big transformation because I was so cut off.
Yeah.
And I say to my sons, I'm like, do you know how much money it cost me to be able to cry? Do you know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars I've spent on these damn tears? Like, I ain't getting rid of them.
Yeah.
I ain't getting rid of them. I went to Moulin Rouge yesterday.
In New York.
And on Broadway. And I was thinking of my son because I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm like reacting. And he's like, you go to movies and you're the only one in the theater making noises. And here I was in Moulin Rouge yesterday. I'm like, thank God he's not here with me because I'm so affected now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a cleaner, clearer vesicle than I ever was before.
Yeah.
So it feels really good.
100%.
Right.
It does.
And we don't live this way. Like, it's better to be disconnected, like, be disconnected, move forward, get on your phone. But I'm like, I have spent, I came out at 32. I've spent so much of my life not me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am not spending another minute not me. I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
The price costs too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Moulin Rouge in Paris?
No.
It's freaking sick.
Really?
Holy
really?
Cow. Very quickly, I'll tell you this because we have more important questions and stories to get into. But I as mentioned, my mother's from Messina, Sicily, but my dad's from France. So, like, I, you know, first time going to Europe in 2018, we get to Paris first.
Yeah.
I'm with a buddy of mine, and we're talking to these two Swedish girls on the line of Moulin Rouge. So I say to the maitre d', can you sit us next to the girls?
This is the kindergarten thing again.
Yes.
Here you are once again, like, right?
Yes.
Right?
There you go.
Right?
Popping up again.
Yeah, that's a theme.
Holy shit. You have to invoice me.
There you go.
So I say to the maitre d', sit us next to the girls.
That's so great.
He thought I meant the showgirls. So he puts us right next to the freaking stage. Now, the show is freaking incredible. Like, the way they're moving, like, I was like, dude, I don't even want to go to this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so blown away until... I don't know if I'm spoiling this for people. If you've never been to Moulin Rouge, stop listening. I'm spoiling it for you, friend. The freaking floor separates.
Mm.
Out comes a tank of water.
Wow.
Inside the tank of water were snakes the size of God knows what.
Wow.
And I was like, oh God. And they're popping. I'm literally, it's right here. I could touch it. I'm like, holy shit. This is freaking weird. Get this snake away from me. It was wild.
Wow.
It was wild. That's my Moulin Rouge story.
Wow.
So I want to talk about one of the things that you were just touching on, the passing of your father. Are you okay going there?
This book, there's nothing.
I just want to make sure that you feel
100%. Okay. 100%.
Knowing your history, and again, this is a part that I resonate with.
Yes.
Knowing your history of your upbringing from this book,
mm-hmm.
do you feel like the passing of your father left you feeling a type of way? So for example, I'll use myself here to convey this a little bit better.
Yes.
My relationship with my mother is not great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. She was always very hard on me, always very neglectful. I always sought out her attention negatively.
Yes.
The whole nine.
Yeah.
She's still in my life, but I feel like the relationship isn't mended.
You got it.
So if I lost her today, I feel like I don't know what I would feel.
Yep.
You know, so I'm curious what your grieving process was, like what came up for you?
Yeah, I was shocked by what happened to me. Like I would have never in a million years mm-hmm. have thought that what would have transpired happened for me with my dad.
Yeah.
And what was the weirdest thing about it, you know, this book is so much bigger than me and it's so much for people. I could have never expected what happened to happen, because when they told me to write the book, I started writing it. And I often say, like, you're supposed to write a book that represents your life.
Mm.
It was the other way around for me. My life dictated the book. Mm. Things started unfolding in my life. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, the last four chapters were written in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was incredible. My dad was sick. He was failing. He had all these medical problems. He was a pharmacist who was self-medicating, so he had a huge narcotics addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mess. And most of my life, I never loved him, and I never felt love from him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I'm, like, going to Chicago to help my sisters take care of him, help my mother, who's totally overwhelmed. He's refusing all kind of help. I'm like, I'll hire a person to come in.
Yeah.
No, I don't need anybody. And what ended up happening, and this was such a gift for me, is that him and I had a process of healing towards the end of his life that I could have never anticipated or predicted in my whole life.
Wow.
It was unbelievable, and it's a gift. And I know that everyone doesn't get that experience, mm-hmm. and I understand that. And I think this is part of why I was like, this was supposed to happen this way so I can help others.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a full healing cycle in a way that many of us don't get a chance to, but I was strong enough and I had done enough of my own work
mm-hmm.
that I was able to show up with him differently towards the end of his life. So it was a combination of him and me.
Mm-hmm.
When I would go in, my sisters would say, nobody can get dad to eat. You're the only one that can get him to eat.
Wow.
Nobody. He doesn't take a bath for anybody. He takes a bath for you. You know what I mean? Like all this stuff, like I was showing up differently on some level, even though he never really acknowledged it. He knew what he did to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was in there somewhere buried in his mind. And we had this incredible moment, the last words he ever spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. And I'm like feeling it right now as we're talking, you know. I felt love from him for mm-hmm. the first time in my life. And I felt love for him.
Mm.
You know, and he just said these words, just like zoom, got right into my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I had this experience of hating somebody for most of my life, and then feeling loved by them and love for them in a way that I could have never, like, all the therapy I did didn't do that.
Yeah.
All the therapy I went through didn't do that. So I understand that everybody doesn't get that. And, you know, what was so powerful for me, separate from that, I was like, oh my God, like, thank you. I saw the humanity in him,
mm-hmm.
and I had love and acceptance for him. He was a limited, complicated guy. It was more about him than it was about me.
Mm-hmm.
I was the recipient of it, and that's more about me than him. So I had that separation. The other thing that, again, I never experienced, I never thought I would feel this way. I started feeling love and compassion and forgiveness for me, for all that I have done, for what I did to my kids, for what I did to my husband, for what I did to myself. So it was this crazy cycle of healing enough to be able to love someone who harms you is very freeing and is very powerful. Like there's, for me, there was nothing more powerful than to be so unaffected that you can love somebody who harms you.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't, I would never expected I would be able to experience that. And then I did the same with myself after I had that experience with him. Like I can apologize. I'm like, I am sorry. I messed up. My fault. You know, I had to apologize to myself, and I kept hearing from these younger parts of me, I'm like, I'm sorry I stayed too long in relationships that weren't good for me, right? I'm sorry I offered too much of myself to others at the service of myself, right? So I forgave my father, and I forgave myself. Like forgiveness, for me, it's a very activating word for people. They go all over the place. Religious, like people get really kind of freaked out about the word forgiveness. But for me, it was the most freeing thing I experienced for me, not for him. It was for me.
Do you wish that conversation with him or those moments with him, the series of events, took place earlier? And I know, like, you can't go back into a time machine, but I'm just curious how you feel. You are a human, right? Like, you know.
Oh, yeah. I am a human, too. Even with all the bio, I'm still a damn human. I love that. You are a human, Frank.
Yeah.
You know, you can make me just feel sorrow. Like, yes and no. Yes and no, you know. And I shouldn't have said, you can make me feel sorrow. It's more like that statement brings up some sorrow in me.
Yeah.
You don't make me feel anything. I feel my own stuff, right? It's weird. Honestly, to be honest with you, no. No, because I had a fucking crazy life. Yeah. Like, you know, conversion therapy, married a woman, came out, had kids. My life right now is super spectacular.
Yeah.
I'm flying all around the world, doing press. Like, I don't, if it would have happened when I was 12, I wouldn't be here right now.
Good point.
You know what I mean?
Valid
so,
point.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Like, is there sadness that I wasn't me earlier? 100%. That's why I was like, tell my kids, like, don't, I'm going to be who I am for the rest of my life. Like, you know what I mean? Because there was a lot of years I wasn't me. Like, I feel bad about marrying my now ex-wife. Like, she had her reasons why she married me. That was about her and her history.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that to somebody. You know what I mean? I married somebody that I was not in love with because I did the right thing in the way that I was supposed to. So I feel bad about that. But, and I do, the other thing I'll tell you, my trauma history got activated with my kids, like a much deeper level of it, because they stirred stuff up in me that shot me back into therapy for a third time. And yeah, I do have regret about transgenerationally passing down some trauma to them. And I've acknowledged it. I apologize for it. I think it's part of their journey too, but I feel bad about it. You know, they're here to learn their thing, just like I was here to learn mine. But I don't think I don't know what my life would be like if I changed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. It's a weird question.
Right?
I ask it from the perspective of, you know, going back and just relating it to myself for sake of conversation. You know, like, I would love to be able to have the conversation with my mother.
Yes.
Now?
Yes.
But as you alluded to, you went off on your way and you did your work.
Yes.
You can't control what that other person does.
No. Nope.
That's a really hard pill to swallow when it's like, hey, like, I'm trying to show up, have this conversation, you know, let's be adults. Let's talk about it. Forget mother, son, or father, son, like, whatever it is. Like, forget about all of that. Let's just talk so that we can mend this in whatever way possible. Mm-hmm. But you can't control them showing up to that conversation or even having the desire to.
So let me tell you this other piece. And this is like healing after the book. Like, the book's already written. It's coming out,
yeah.
You know, May 7th. And I had an experience with my mother 2 weeks ago. That was a version
2 weeks ago from today?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she's alive. She's still here. I'm doing everything I can. I promised my dad I would take care of her and help her, and I'm doing what I can.
Yeah.
She hasn't read the book. She doesn't want to read the book. She's like, you're gonna harm your father's legacy. Mm. Why are you doing this? You know? So, and I'm like, Mom, you can feel what you want. I'm here to support you. And we had a very powerful conversation. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, I was in Chicago filming this show, and I said, Mom, is it possible for you to love him and maybe acknowledge that he harmed me? Because when I was talking to her, she's like, nothing happened. Maybe he hit you once. Why do you need to do this? Like, she was in her protective mode.
Yeah.
Right? And I showed up healed. She wasn't there because of her capacity.
Yeah.
So my point for you is, like, the other person doesn't have to be there in order for you to heal with them. Do you understand that?
Absolutely.
You understand that? Because what I said to her, and I, part of me couldn't believe I said this to her, but I meant it. I said, Mom, most of my life I chose you over me. Mm. In order to survive. I said, when I came out at 32, I chose me over you because I thought my whole family would disown me. Mm-hmm. I really did. Conservative Midwestern family. And I said to her, I'm choosing me again. Mm-hmm. I said, honestly, I can get emotional about it. I am telling this story because this is my truth. And I am telling this so the world can learn about healing.
Yeah.
And if it means that you won't have a relationship with me ever again, then that's what it's going to be. Mm. I am not going to choose you over me now.
Yeah.
That was very powerful to say to your mother who you love. And you know what happened? Like, my showing up like that, Matt, like, she acknowledged for the first time what happened. Mm. For the first time, she said, I didn't protect you. I did need him too much, and I'm sorry. Hmm. Like, I never thought that would happen. But my showing up the way I did, not needing anything from her,
yeah,
but sharing my truth and putting that out, like, if you can't handle, you don't want to be with me anymore, your decision, I'll deal with it. Mm-hmm. I am not sacrificing myself anymore for anyone, even you. Which was very powerful, and I really meant it. But she rose to the occasion. Like, I'm sorry. I said, Mom, I stopped her. I started crying. She grabs my hand. I said, could we just slow this down? I said, you have never apologized my whole life. Could we just slow this down? And I just wanted to take it in. Like, Frankie wanted to take it in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, she's old, her memory's failing. My brother's like, I don't know if she's going to remember it. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. I had that experience and won't take it away. And I'm going to continue to help her and support her.
I love that.
And she's like, I'll read the book.
Did she read it?
I don't know. I gave her a copy. We will see. It's 2 weeks ago. We'll see.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is
so you can heal with somebody without them showing up in the ways that you need them to.
Hmm.
If you show up, right, in the ways that you need to. And it's not attacking. I wasn't attacking. I wasn't mean. I was courageously sharing my truth, which was a big risk.
Yeah.
It was a big risk.
You used the word healed.
Yes.
I'm always curious about this word.
Did I say healed?
Duh. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Damn. Let me say D for damn, okay?
No, I'm just always really curious. Like,
yes,
if there's a good... Yeah, and it's just something I caught on to, so I was just curious.
Yeah.
But now I hear you, you know, the way you're talking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it an it's never ending?
Never ending. That's I used to that's funny. It's funny I said healed because I used to say permanent healing in the workshops I did. I think I even wrote that in Transcending Trauma, my other book.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't believe it anymore. I really don't believe it. I don't think anybody's healed. I don't. I think it's an ongoing process. I don't get activated in the same way I do at all anymore. Something comes up. It's a new layer of learning. It happens so much quicker.
Yeah.
Like I can be aware and then I can recover much quicker. So I don't, I think it's not permanently healed.
Yeah.
I think we're not permanently anything. I think there's an evolution. So it is a change in my belief system and my philosophy is that these wounds can get reactivated, but it's not the same. It's not like rinse and repeat. It's not like you do. Oftentimes when we're not healed, we repeat the same patterns over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
This is different. This is when you're healed, a new dimension shows up each time it gets activated. So that's what I hold now around it.
I love that.
Yeah.
So knowing that, you know, well, for example, if being healed completely isn't necessarily a reality per se.
I don't think so. Not in human form.
Okay. So if that's the case, does that mean that our trauma does move into our kids or the people that are around us, right? Because you were mentioning how you felt guilt or shame or whatever it was around that. But the gentleman that's sitting across from me right now, like, you've done a plethora of work.
Yes.
You help people do this work.
Yes.
Right? So, like, to me, what I think now is, like, is that not just part of life?
Yeah, it is part of life. And, you know, with my kids, like, I healed the place in me that got terrified when they would fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they would fight, it terrified me because if I fought like that, I would get I've gotten beaten.
Yeah.
And the violence, and I use violence in quotes, when I saw my kids being normal boys, it my younger part experienced it as violence and got terrified. That doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not reactive with them. I'm clear. I show up. I don't engage when they're in that nasty teenage place anymore. So I am very different with them. Is something going to come up between us that will kind of bring something from my history up again? Probably. Do you know what I mean? So is it normal? I don't know. I guess the jury's out. I don't think we're ever done. Like I wrote the book. I'm like, oh my God, thank you, Dad. Like we had this huge healing experience. I was like, 2 weeks ago, I had one with my mom. Like I can't put that one as chapter 17. You know what I mean? Like, so I think it just keeps going and we keep growing. It's for me, it's like, this is not judgment. It's energetic evolution.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I think about it. I'm operating at a different energy level now than I used to 5 years ago or 3 years ago.
Sure.
So I'm just kind of here right now, and I'm interacting with people who are here right now. And when I interact with somebody who might be at a different energy level because they're holding more trauma, I kind of have a different relationship with them.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
So I, yeah, that's the way I think about it. But I'm not, I'm a seeker in a way that I don't want to harm people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really want to bring more love, connection, and unity to the world.
You're doing it.
Thank you.
You are doing it.
Well, thank you. So are you in your way. We all are, right?
Well, I'm doing it through you.
Yeah,
you
know? It's so awesome. So anything that can support that, I'm going to keep doing.
Yeah, yeah. You use the word love a lot.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of the title of the book.
Yes.
What does love mean?
Ooh, that's interesting. Nobody's ever asked me that before. For me, love is living through source, living through God. I think love is unity. I think love is connection. I think love is kind.
Mm.
And I do feel like I think we all, whatever people's religious or spiritual beliefs is, my belief is that is love is one when we're not in human form and we come down here. as humans, and we have that love in us.
Yeah.
And that's why we seek connection and relationship, because we're seeking the love in somebody else. So I think it's always kind of bringing us back to that oneness and that unity. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel. And I think we have choice here as a human, and we keep fucking up because we have the option to, you know what I mean? And I think we just keep bringing ourselves back to love, bringing back. I think when we die and transition, we go back to love in that oneness way. I feel my dad now in a very different way. We have an amazing.
Talk to me about that.
Oh my gosh, we have the best relationship now. I knew we would. When he in human form, he had a lot of limitations.
Yeah.
And now that he's not in human form anymore, like, we have an amazing relationship.
Yeah.
We really do. I love my connection with him. And I kind of knew that would, I knew that would happen. I didn't know what it would look like or feel like.
Yeah.
When I do talks, and I should have brought it this weekend, I wear his watch.
Oh, I love that.
I wear his watch now.
This is my grandfather's chain.
I was wondering about that. I saw it. I was like, I know that has meaning.
Yeah.
And I just have and I can feel chills through my body when I'm talking about it. And I talk about his watch right now.
Yeah.
Like, I have this amazing connection with him. I'm like, Dad, I did a keynote in D.C. a couple weeks ago in front of 1,400 people. And I'm like, come on, Dad. Like, we're doing the work together.
Yeah.
Put the watch on, you know, and... so I do feel love is that.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is it an action?
It's a state of being.
A state of being.
Yeah.
The reason I ask if it's an action is because I believe love out of obligation versus love out of a desire.
I think it's an energy, like it, and it flows out. It flows in you and through you and out of you. Like I feel like it's a flow.
Yeah,
I think of it as a state of being. I think of it as an energy. It can be an action.
Yeah,
you know, your comment was a loving action to me. It was. That's how I felt it.
Yeah,
right. So yeah, it can be action, but I think it's an embodied state of being, and people get it in different ways. Mm. Right?
I love that. If and when, not if, but when people pick up this book, To Be Loved, if they could only take one thing away from it, what do you want that one thing to be?
Could I say two?
You could say two.
Am I allowed to say two?
We could cheat.
Two is, one is healing is possible.
Yeah.
Healing is possible. The second is we're all complicated. We've all been harmed, and we all harm. Mm. And so I want people to know we're all complicated people, and healing is possible for everyone. Mm. That would be the message of this book.
What would be your message to someone that is about to start their healing journey or hasn't started yet? You're saying healing is possible, but they're in that beginning stage, or they might just feel the nudge from this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What would your message be to them?
Go in instead of out. Mm. The answers are within you. The wisdom is within. Start by getting curious inside, because the natural tendency is to seek out for the answers, because as kids, we needed somebody outside to help us. Mm. So it's a natural tendency. So I say, if you're going to start this journey, maybe get a journal. Maybe go for a run and listen to some music. Like, go in, not out, because those are the relationships that need to be healed, are the internal ones. They get severed because of trauma. And those are the relationships you need to start building and learning about and loving within.
I love that. I'm going to ask you a question that I asked you last time.
Okay.
I want to see if your answer is different. Funny enough, I know you were just with Gabby Bernstein.
Yes.
I asked her this same question. She was the first person I asked it to. And then I asked it to you. You were the only two people I ever asked it to.
Interesting.
Is everyone meant to heal in this lifetime?
No.
No. That was quick.
You know, do I want everybody to heal? 100%.
Yeah.
We come here, my view, we come here for different lessons. Mm. And some people come to learn about repeating, Some people come to learn about harming. Mm. Some people come to learn about dying as a baby, in my view. Okay? I don't think we're here, that everybody is here each time with the same lesson. Do I want everybody to learn and grow and evolve? 100%. Mm. Right? Will I do whatever I can to push that needle forward? Yes, sir. You know what I mean? But I do, this is hard for people like who have lost children. This sure. doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And I haven't lost a kid. Hopefully I won't. But that would be the child's journey mm-hmm. of having that experience this lifetime, in my view. And that may be a hard thing for people to hear, but I think we're here to have different experiences. Like, you know, why am I'm gay this time? Mm. Like, what's that about? Like, sometimes I'm like, that's the weirdest thing to be, like, in love with a man and raising children. Like, how weird is that? How did that happen? You know, but I kind of feel like I'm supposed to have that experience.
Sure.
This round. Do you know what I mean? So I think we're here for different experiences.
Yeah.
We all have the option, because we have free will, to heal. But I do think we're here to have adversity. That, I think, is true.
Absolutely.
Right?
You speak my language. I love this so much.
It's great. I love being with you. I really do. And it's even better live.
So much better.
Yes.
Again, you know, thank you for your effort to make this work. Like, yeah. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think, like, back in 2020, I had my soul read, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
By Sonia Chalkette.
Mm.
And that really expanded my mind to what you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm born Roman Catholic.
Yeah, me too.
You're born today. You know, you're born today, you die, that's it. No other life. But now I'm like, you know what? This is, and it's re-enhanced. I lost my grandfather a couple months ago, right?
Oh,
lived
wow,
a very
really?
Long life.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. 92, great life.
This
right?
feels different to me now.
So how about this? That. He's born and raised in the neighborhood we're in, Park Slope, Brooklyn. Yeah. He got buried in it.
Mm-hmm.
As we're at the burial, this freaking bird, not a pigeon, by the way. He didn't come back as a pigeon. We are in New York, but it wasn't a pigeon.
It's okay if he did, but he didn't.
He didn't. This freaking bird just like swoops yes. and lands atop a tree.
Yes.
Overlooking, he was in the Air Force, so like there was a whole little memorial. Mm. And just starts chirping.
Mm-hmm.
The whole freak. I caught it on video. Yeah. I'm like, I need this on video because this yes. is fucking insane.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe that was just coincidence.
Right. Right.
I go back after doing a podcast here a couple weeks ago. I bought him like an he was such a patriot, like loved America.
Yes.
Like that, you know, like that's yes. who he was. I buy a flag. It has like a nice little Air Force, you know, emblem. I plant it in the ground. And what happens? That fucking bird is back.
God. Great. Yeah. So good.
And I got that on video.
So good.
I'm like, is there a nest? So I'm looking, no nest.
Yeah.
One bird. Maybe it wasn't the same one, same type.
Wow.
I say to myself, come on.
Yeah.
Like, if that doesn't tell you there's a greater power,
right.
if that doesn't tell you that your soul is something that, you know, travels,
yes,
come on.
Yes, that's
know?
Exactly right.
Come on.
And are you able to have a relationship with him this way? Yet?
Funny enough, and I'll be very transparent
yes.
with you, the reason we're in the studio right now is because of him.
Mm.
Meaning, I was scared to do in-person interviews for a while. It's like the first... I hope you don't mind me being
yeah,
blunt.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like the first time you have sex without a condom.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more risky,
so great.
Right? Like, there's no veil between us. We're
yes.
not looking into a screen.
Yes.
You know? So
yeah.
I had a fear of that for a while.
Yeah, interesting.
And I don't know if that's because I was scared of not being as good as I know I am when I'm doing it virtually yeah. or whatever the case may be.
Yes.
But when he passed away, I made a promise and I said, I'm going to live all out.
Yeah.
I'm going to live full out.
Wow.
So even as recent as this morning, like come and granted, I've been doing it in the studio a lot more often now, but like
yes.
even in the process of like coming here this morning, like I felt the connection.
Yes. Beautiful.
You know,
beautiful. That's great.
Yeah.
That's the thing I really love for people to continue. These relationships can continue. It's like, this is the next version of my relationship with my father.
Yeah.
So it's a continuation and it's a different iteration, but to not just like, oh, he's not here in human form, so therefore our relationship is over.
No.
Like, I love that you're open to having him in your life in this kind of way, because it's pretty incredible.
I'll be transparent again. Thinking about that also freaks me out a little bit, because it's like, is my grandfather watching me have sex? Is my grandfather, I'm just like, does that like happen?
So close the window to the memorial. Sorry, no birds are allowed in the bedroom.
Nothing. That's so I think
great.
Like that too. You know,
that's
whatever.
Great. I love that. I think, you know what? He's discerning. He's like, it's like kids don't want to see their parents have sex.
No,
I don't think your grandpa wants
to. I know
to watch
you
it.
Wrote about that.
That's right.
I read that chapter.
Oh my God. That was terrifying, mortifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, you know, and just reiterating to everyone listening to this right now, like, this book is so transparent, so relatable. So putting it out there, the link is in the show notes of this episode. Whether you're on YouTube, whether you're listening from an audio platform, the link is there for you to grab a copy of what we're talking about. I think that's so important, because I'm not kidding, Frank. Like, I went through this and I, you know, instantly, that's why I said, I'm going to do my own intro for, like, I read the bio, but you are so relatable. I'm not a doctor. I did go to school for 7 years, but I only walked out with a 4-year degree. So, you know, we can't relate on every front, but, you know, I really do love it. So putting that out there for everyone. Link in the show notes of this episode, but I'm going to ask you three last questions, because I just realized how long we've been going.
Yeah, I know.
I feel
it's
like
so
we've been
great.
Running for like an hour. It's been That's longer great. Than that. I know you've been doing a huge press run, and I'm sure it's going to continue. What's a question you wish more people would ask you, and how would you answer it?
I guess I wish people would ask me, what's the most painful? What's the saddest? Right? Mm. Like, I spent a lot of my life in pain and sadness.
Yeah.
And now I'm like preaching hope and healing. Right? So I guess in some ways I don't want the hardship or the pain to get lost in the message, because it can come across as like, Frank's great because he's healed now, you know, healed. There we go again. Right? Like, it's like, this is hard.
Yeah.
This is painful. And it's okay to feel bad.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I knew what you know, how would my life be different? And I know it's a little bit of a hypothetical, because we don't, you
Well,
know.
You'd take more risks now.
Mm.
You'd be more courageous now. You'd speak up more in ways that maybe people don't want to hear, but it's important for you to speak your truth, you know. And I'm talking to you because I'm talking to a younger version of me in that way. I'm so much less conflict avoidant, and I can speak up and show up differently now. And I wish I would have done that earlier, but I didn't have the confidence to do that. And people don't react in the ways I feared they would.
Mm.
They can tolerate more of me than I was aware of.
Yeah, I love that. Mm. I love that. Last question for you. Yep. By the way, this has been a blast.
Yeah,
this has
Same.
Been an absolute blast.
I agree.
Last question. You live to whatever year you want to live to.
Mm-hmm.
You impact as many people through this book, the other books that are to come, the books that have came, all of it. Social, podcast, the whole nine.
Yep.
But if I think of Dr. Frank, I can only remember one piece of advice associated to your name. What is the advice you want to be remembered for?
Love and kindness matter.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah.
Why do they matter?
Because it's really kind of what it's all about anyway.
Mm.
I think when we strip down everything, but love, kindness, and connection are kind of the only thing that matters.
Mm. at the end of it. Yeah. And I think that's a representation of your story with your dad.
Why? And I will, you know, I wish we'd, I'm hoping it's not going to take people 60 years to get the message like I did. You know what I mean? Like, get it sooner than me. Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I have all this work stuff, and I'm always thinking about my kids. I'm always thinking about my husband. I think about my relationships more than my work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm impacting people in the world, and I don't want to lose sight of love and connection through my intimate relationships.
I love that. Dr. Frank, this has been an absolute pleasure.
Yes.
Reminding everyone again, link to the book in the show notes, socials, websites, the whole nine. Anything else that we should be putting in there?
I mean, the other two things, you mentioned them briefly, just to say quickly, like I have the Trauma Institute now. I started this new organization, traumainstitute.com, and it really is to bring integrated trauma treatment to the general public and the next generation of healers. Mm-hmm. So traumainstitute.com is a new company that I feel very passionate about. And same with trauma-informed media, trauma-informedmedia.com, and that is bringing trauma-informed content to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm already working with people on the movie rights to the book, which is so exciting. So it's like all the ways to get this message out there.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
So much more to come.
Yeah.
So much more to come. Dr. Frank, this is a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I love it. It's been great.
This is great. It's a wrap.